One day after the PGA Tour announced major changes that include cutting field sizes and players, we'll have more reaction from across the game. Is it an unfair narrowing of pathways to make a living or a necessary toughening of competitive standards? That depends on who you ask, so we're asking. Tim O'Neill has travelled a long road in this game. He's won in Colombia, in Chile, in the Dominican Republic, in Italy, in Morocco, and now in Virginia on the PGA Tour Champions. He's here to talk about that remarkable journey. And while New York City is more about baseball this week, it's still one of the coolest golf cities in America. Even if it will test your patience at times, we'll prove it. Golf Today starts now.
Golf Today.
Championship matches are set for the 10th Eastlake Cup. We're leading you into what looks to be an exciting conclusion down in Atlanta, Georgia, 3 p.m. Eastern Time, right here on Golf Channel. Hi, and welcome into Golf Today. I'm Eamon Lynch, joined by our man in Orlando, Rex Hoggard, as we tackle everything worth talking about in this game. And it turns out there's plenty to talk about, even as the leaves turn. In case you missed it, there was news Tuesday out of the PGA Tour, an announcement of a pretty extensive slate of changes. Proposed changes, we should say, that could impact field sizes and the number of exempt players. And those include reducing field sizes from the current 156 down to as low as 120, changing the exempt status so that only 100 in the FedEx Cup would receive cards as opposed to the current 125. There'd also be a reduction in Korn Ferry Tour graduates from 30 to 20, and the elimination of almost all of the regular season Monday qualifier tournaments. And with reaction to these potential changes that are going to be voted on in November, we welcome in for our roundtable our colleagues Todd Lewis and Brently Romine. Todd, I want to start with you. These proposals came from the Player Advisory Council, which is a 16-man committee made up of both superstars and journeymen in the game. It's chaired by Camilo Villegas. You talked to Camilo this morning. What did he have to say?
Yeah, and he is a key component in this story. Not only is Camilo Villegas the chairman of the Player Advisory Council, he was voted on to that position by his peers, but also he is going to elevate, because of his position, in 2025, in January of 2025, to be on the PGA Tour Policy Board. So he helped draft this memo and also will be voting on it next year. And I asked him to kind of break down the reasoning why this proposal was put out there. And he said there are a couple of reasons. Number one, and probably the biggest to him in my conversation, was what does a tour card mean for the players that graduate from the Korn Ferry Tour, graduate from Q School? They are not going to get a lot of starts, especially early in the PGA Tour season. They ran a lot of metrics, and they said the average start for those players are maybe four in the first 15 events. So they wanted to shrink the size from the Korn Ferry Tour to from 30 to 20. Also, if you look at historically, the Korn Ferry Tour graduates in the Korn Ferry Tour standings positions 21 through 30, those players generally do not retain their card. And positions 101 through 125 in the FedEx Cup standings, they have a tough time retaining their card too. So that was in play. Secondly, it became a big giant traffic jam in some events on the PGA Tour with these 156-man fields, players not being able to finish on Thursday and Friday. And so they decided to come together, they being the pack, to create this memo that is now out there. Now, I will say that Camilo Villegas, he won last year. He is exempt. He was exempt on the PGA Tour season this year and is exempt next year. But if this goes through, this could actually affect him. But he told me that despite being in my early 40s and I'm a five-time winner out here on the PGA Tour, and yes, I would love to have more playing opportunities, the game is more important. Let's streamline it. Let's make it better for the fans. Let's have play ending on the day it's supposed to. And that was very critical for the pack. Now, this is not just a shocking thing. This is something that's been talked about for maybe a couple years now in trying to reduce the membership and reduce the tournament field size. So that's the main reasoning why they wanted to do this.
Todd, do you think that sentiment of Camilo's will be shared by a lot of other players? Because one thing we have seen in this game in the last few years is golfers tend to make fairly selfish decisions based on where they are in their careers at a certain point in time. So there are going to be a lot of guys out there who don't actually like this proposal.
Yeah, absolutely. And Camilo said he has gotten a lot of pushback from, as you, we like to say, the rank and file players, the guys who aren't generally in the signature events. The bigger stars on the PGA Tour get most of those. So, yes, there has been some pushback. Here's an interesting note. Josh Teeter is a part of the Player Advisory Council as well. And Josh is fighting to keep his card on the PGA Tour. And I reached out to Josh because, again, he was in that room that helped put together this memo, and he said, yes, there are a lot of positives about this, but the Korn Ferry Tour now is going to have better players. He hopes that that tour gets better purses, gets more money. He's a little concerned about how the sponsors of these full field events will be now, considering that they have fewer players. But one thing he said, too, is that the first two rounds of March Madness, he's a Kentucky, University of Kentucky fan. Let's take that into consideration. He said, you have favorites winning and Cinderella's beating the Blue Bloods. That's what the average sports fan likes to see. And this doesn't give us the chance of that happening very often. And this is from a guy who was in the room that helped put this proposal together.
Now, Brentley, you have a story up on golfchannel.com right now where you talked to quite a few players, really across the spectrum at each level. What are some of the concerns that you heard about this proposal?
Yeah, Rex. Well, the concern is that next year on the PGA Tour for the rookies, for the Korn Ferry Tour grads, the Q School grads, it's going to be an unprecedented year in terms of difficulty in keeping your card. And the reason I say that and the reason these players believe that is because let's go back to earlier this year. I was out at the Cognizant Classic talking to some of these Korn Ferry Tour grads that, as Todd mentioned, didn't get many starts. I talked to Rafa Campos, who had played something like three of the first nine events. And when he does get the opportunity, he's playing for significantly fewer points. And he told me, quote, I don't feel a part of the PGA Tour. And so these players realize that when these changes go into effect in 2026, it's going to close that gap between the A schedule that the elites are playing and the B schedule. It's going to provide more meaning to that PGA Tour card. If you have a tour card, you're going to be able to play in every single open event, except for maybe the Waste Management Phoenix Open. So really the reaction from a lot of the rookies coming in next year, and keep in mind, they're all in Ponte Vedra right now for rookie orientation today, it was overly positive, and that surprised me a little bit. The only qualm was the reduction of the Monday qualifier spot. A lot of these guys have played in a lot of those Monday qualifiers, and you know the tour has leaned on some of those stories a bit as well, and we're going to see seven fewer Monday qualifiers earlier in the season. Three are going to go down two spots. And then continuing to talk to some of these players, there was kind of a glass half full approach in that there was one interesting perspective that got brought up to me, and that was, yes, it's going to be a challenge next year, but for the 21 through 30, if these rules went into in place 1 year earlier, they wouldn't even be on the PGA Tour. So it's all about taking advantage of the opportunities that you get and keeping a positive mindset. Because if you start 2025 complaining and woe is me, you've already lost your card.
Todd, there's a lot of debate going on about a lot of these particular proposals. The Monday qualifier, I think, is an interesting one because I would argue that's something the tour should lean into as part of the weekly narrative of life out there. This vote is November 18th. Do you see any of these proposals kind of being tweaked or potentially rejected by the policy board? Or would you suggest it's more likely to be a kind of a rubber stamping of what the players want?
Yeah, I think anything could happen, sure. But from what I'm hearing and talking to Camilo Majegas and other people that are involved in this memo and this proposal, I think it is generally going to get rubber stamped. I do want to follow up one other, couple other things that Camilo Majegas told me too. He said by reducing the Korn Ferry Tour graduates from 30 to 20, those 20 will probably get close to 21, maybe even 21 to 22 starts in the season. That's significantly higher. So more playing opportunities for those guys. And for those who finish 101 through 125 in the FedEx Cup standings, they will have conditional status. And Camilo believes, again, they ran a lot of metrics, that those players will get somewhere between 15 and 17 starts. So it's not like these guys are getting completely shut out. So they are getting some starts. But I do think that this is, from what I'm hearing, again, anything can happen, that this is going to be positively approved by the Tour Policy Board.
I get the feeling these are changes we're going to be talking about for quite some time to come. Thanks for the time today, guys. Well, coming up, the LPGA is the only major tour in action this week as the Asia Swing concludes in Japan. Beth Ann Nichols joins us with a preview. Golf Today, back with more after this. We're back on Golf Today. The LPGA is the only major tour in action this week. The ladies wrap the Asian Swing with the Toto Japan Classic. The 78-woman field that is made up of players from the LPGA and the Japan LPGA Tours. There is no cut. Coverage begins tonight, 11 p.m. Eastern Time. This event has been around for more than 50 years and has a stout list of Hall of Fame winners. Paddy Sheehan, Betsy King, Shan Shan Feng, all two-time winners. Annika Sorenstam won 5 years in a row. And let's welcome in my Golf Week colleague, Beth Ann Nichols, to talk some LPGA Tour action. Beth Ann, the Asia Swing's in Japan this week. Last week it was Malaysia. It was another win for Ronin Yin. It's her third of the season. She's up to number three in the Rolex rankings in some pretty elite company. Is she kind of the underappreciated superstar of the tour right now?
I definitely think so. And what a dynamic personality as fans get to know Ronnie, as everyone calls her, a little bit more. You know, she's only 22 years old. She said last week after she won in Malaysia that, you know, first of all, she found something with her driver. She's one of the premier ball strikers on the LPGA, but mostly it's her mental game that has gone to another level. She put a lot of pressure on herself after having such a fabulous year last year, winning multiple titles, including a major championship, and was kind of feeling a little crushed by that earlier. But then she had an injury at the Mizuho, and that kind of freed her up because she realized, you know, I really love this. I love everything about this tour and this game, and she missed it. And so I think that shifted her mindset a little bit, freed her up, and you've seen her win, as you say, two of the last three titles in Asia.
We've had so much focus this season on Nelly Korda, with good reason, with her half dozen victories out there, but there are five American winners on the LPGA Tour this season. Might not seem like a lot, but it wasn't that long ago when the Americans seemed to be kind of struggling to hold their own against a global talent pool on the LPGA Tour. Do you think things have kind of stabilized for American golf out there right now?
I do. I think, you know, for a while there, we would see two, maybe only three Americans win on tour. And I think now, you know, last year we had eight American winners. The year before that, seven different Americans won on the LPGA. So we're not talking total titles, we're talking different players. And I think that's really important for the tour. And I think that's something that people have asked me about for a long time over the course of my career. And I really think, you know, it's something that the Americans are in a really good place right now. I don't think it's something that fans really need to worry about.
On the graphic we were just watching there, we saw Rose Zhang's victory at the Cognizant Founders Cup. We hear a lot in golf these days about sponsors stepping away for a variety of reasons. Cognizant came in 3 years ago to the LPGA Tour. They immediately doubled the prize fund for that tournament to $3 million. Last week, they announced they're stepping away. How big a blow is that to the LPGA Tour?
You know, I think it's significant on a number of levels. You know, I think Cognizant represented the future at that time, you know, and when they came in, they made a splash by coming in both the men's game and the women's game simultaneously in terms of their sponsorship. So for them to be going more heavily in the direction of the men's game going forward and pulling out significantly from the LPGA, they still have a presence in the women's game, but certainly not what they had before. You know, It's troublesome, you know, because this is a Fortune 100 company. These are the folks you want out there, you know, spreading the good news to other Fortune 500 companies about, you know, how great it is to be a part of the LPGA product. So it is really disappointing to see them move on so quickly. And I think it also, when you look at a tournament like Portland, for example, has been on fumes the last several years, a big question mark on what's going to happen to one of the longest running tournaments on the LPGA schedule. So, you know, a tournament that's been around forever, you know, in trouble, and then a tournament that literally celebrates, you know, the 13 women who made this tour, you know, is... yeah, it's an alarm bell for sure. And the tour is celebrating 75 years next year. You can't not have a Founders Cup. So they're going to have to figure this one out.
Well, one person who's going to bring a lot of eyeballs, of course, Caitlin Clark. She's playing the Pro-Am at the Anika down in Florida just a couple of weeks from now. I believe you've got some insight on who's actually been helping her prepare for that event.
You know, Evan, it's so rare that we hear of a female instructor helping a high-profile athlete, whether it's an LPGA player or an athlete from another sport. So I was really intrigued when I heard that Martha Foyer Falconer, who played on the LPGA in the late 80s, early 90s, she's an assistant pro at Crooked Stick up there in Indiana, and she's been working with Caitlin on her golf swing and her short game. And she said to me, you know, first of all, it's a thrill. Of course, Martha is a native of Indiana, huge basketball fan. She actually describes herself as a basketball player turned golfer. But she said for Caitlin, she is absolutely nuts about the game. She loves to pound drivers. She just wants to get up there and kill it. She was battling a slice. Martha had her move back a little bit. They started on wedges and worked their way up. And she said, I was most impressed with Caitlin's ability to make adjustments so quickly, that slice that she was so worried about diminished pretty quickly by the time they got driver back in her hand. And here she is, you know, she's teaching her about the bump and run. Caitlin's been playing golf for a long time, but learning a lot of new concepts.
That short game looked pretty sharp right here. This could be the teacher that I've been looking for all these years, Bethann. I'm sure everyone's going to be watching that. In the meantime, we'll be watching Japan. I'm not sure if we're going to need a cup of coffee or a glass of wine for that viewing schedule, but we look forward to it. Thanks for joining us, Bethann.
Thanks, David.
Let's continue the global tour here. Time now for a DP World Tour update. There's two events remaining on the 2024 DP World Tour schedule. Next week, it's Abu Dhabi, followed by the season-ending DP World Tour Championship the following week in Dubai. Now, the top 70 in the Race to Dubai rankings after last week's Genesis Championship earned their spots in the DP World Tour playoffs. Abu Dhabi will feature these five guys who made their way in, and one of those names, Nicolai Højgaard, needs another good week in Abu Dhabi to defend his title in Dubai. He spoke about that after making his move.
You'll manage to reset the energy levels now ahead of Abu Dhabi, but I know the next goal is to get into the DP World Tour Championship to defend your title. How much is that on your mind now?
Yeah, it will definitely creep in next week. I just want to play that. I mean, it's one of the events in Europe I just want to play every year for the rest of my life. It's one of my favourite events, and I'm going to do my best to recover next week and try to have a good week in Abu Dhabi. But I need a really good result in Abu Dhabi to get myself in Dubai. But the golf has been not too bad lately, and if I can get myself recovered and loaded again with good food, and you know, I'll be ready for Abu Dhabi and give it a go.
Højgaard's win at the season-ending championship in Dubai last year was his first Rolex Series title. He beat Rory McIlroy that week. McIlroy, though, won the Race to Dubai title and currently leads the way in the rankings this year as well. Golf Today is back after this. It's the final day of the Eastlake Cup down in Atlanta, one of the most familiar venues in this game. Both the championship and consolation matches are underway, and that's coming up top of the hour, 3 p.m. And on the women's side, USC taking on LSU, and on the men, Georgia Tech taking on Auburn. Let's send it out to the most plugged reporter in college golf, Steve Berkowski. He's on the call this week with John Cook.
Eamon, thrilled to be joining you from Atlanta, just 5 miles east of downtown. You see the skyline there in the background, a picture-perfect October afternoon here at Eastlake Golf Club. Temperatures in the high 70s, a little gentle breeze once again. We go to the green at 9, LSU senior Anya Donegan playing the standout freshman from USC, Jasmine Koo, and Donegan up against it early, John.
Yeah, 139 yards this afternoon for the women. That was an awkward putt through the fringe down the hill. Really well done.
Got a freshman and a senior battling it out in that very first match for the women. For the men, Aiden Tran, the Georgia Tech junior, he's one up against Ryan Eshelman from Auburn, looking to extend that lead. Georgia Tech, they are members here at Eastlake Golf Club. They've had reps around this place a lot more than many others.
Yeah, that's a big advantage with the restoration
putt on the way for Brendan Valdez, Auburn senior. He's tied up against Albert Hansen, the freshman for Georgia Tech. Valdez just creeping it down there. Should be in the concession range.
Yep. Tough par four there, the seventh. That front pin. Good pace there for Brendan.
And he is giving a rest to that putt. We go back to nine. Jasmine Koo, long left of the green.
Yeah, this is going to be putting up a little bit of a slope, then down the hill. Choosing putter. Just needs to get it barely on the green. It should go feet down a little bit better. Get a little bit closer. Not too bad, but a lot of work left to tie this hole.
Great week for Koo, winning the individual title here on Monday. Nine birdies, part of a 7-under 65. Back to the green at seven. This is Albert Hansen for par to tie the hole against Brendan Valdez.
Headed in the front bunker. Bunker shot to there, and Brendan Valdez is going to win that hole.
And we go back to Jasmine Koo trying to save her par at nine.
Yeah, tie the hole.
She was ready. Saw her on the range this morning, said hello, pleasantries. She's like, I'm ready for today. Are you? So she was excited to get in that first match out USC for USC four, and LSU set a bit three. Of a tone for
get
the
her,
team.
Get her going.
Second match for the ladies, Cindy Koh from USC against Taylor Riley from LSU. This is Koh at eight, her second shot, currently tied up with Riley.
Yeah, the previous 2 days, or the yesterday, the, in this first round of the match play, both the men and the women could drive it on this green, but not today, so they have to lay the ball back, and she, beautiful.
Yeah, heck of a shot by Cindy Koh. That likely going to be a birdie three for her as this back and forth battle between LSU and USC continues. A tight one as well for the men as we head to the tee at nine. The par three, Ryan Eshelman, the redshirt senior from Auburn, tied up against Aiden Tran.
212 yards today for the men. Pin tucked over in that left corner. If you miss it left, there's a pitching area over there, but he even misses that. In the rough. Now he's going to have to pitch it across and down into that little pitching area. Short-sighted. That was a big miss.
Keep it right here with Aiden Tran, and we talk about the opportunities Georgia Tech has had here through the years. But Bruce Hepler, the head coach, telling me earlier in the day, we've maybe only had three or four reps on this golf course since the restoration, so maybe not as much of an advantage as you would think.
Yeah, the golf course only opened just before the Tour Championship at the end of August, and now only a couple more weeks after that. So golf course is settling in.
But still a level of comfort every time.
Absolutely.
Georgia Tech that drives down.
Even left of left.
Yeah.
Get two over there.
Good luck there.
Good luck there is
that
right.
One up and down. We've got a Championship Wednesday underway here in Atlanta. A team title to be decided by day's end. Auburn and Georgia Tech. The Tigers leading in one match. The Yellow Jackets in those final two. The first two tied up as they're just creeping into the front part of that opening nine. And for the women, LSU and Southern Cal. The women of Troy leading in three of five. Shaping up to be a good one here this afternoon. Rex and Eamon, we will see you at the top of the hour for our coverage.
And as Berko mentioned, coverage of the championship matches are coming your way at 3 p.m. Eastern time right here on Golf Channel as the Eastlake Cup concludes. Before we go to break, let's take a look at the PGA Tour University Ranking, the program that awards professional status to top graduating college golfers. David Ford, North Carolina, still in the number one spot thanks to two victories in his last two starts. Jose Le Ballester from Arizona State, the reigning U.S. amateur champion, in second place. Now, Tim O'Neill has won the Dominion Energy Classic a couple of weeks ago on the PGA Tour Champions, and while it's accurate to say that it was his first victory on that tour, it doesn't quite do justice to the long road he has travelled to this success. We'll explain that when Tim joins us right after this break.
Golf Central Update, brought to you by Callaway Golf.
The PGA Tour champion season wraps next week with the Charles Schwab Cup Championship at Phoenix Country Club. The top 36 players on the points list after the Simmons Bank Championship advance to Phoenix, where the finale will be played over 72 holes. Well, 2 weeks ago, Tim O'Neill won the first leg of the playoffs. That was the Dominion Energy Charity Classic. Final round 65 helped him to a two-stroke victory over Ricardo Gonzalez. It was his first senior win for the 52-year-old veteran, moved him from 55th place in the Charles Schwab Cup to 13th, and that guarantees him a spot in the all-important top 36 by season's end. And it's been quite the career that Tim O'Neill has put together. He played in a lot of places. His first win in his 50th Champions Tour start, 3 career wins on the PGA Tour Americas. Been a veteran of the Corn Ferry Tour. He's made 8 starts on the PGA Tour and has won 9 times on the Advocates Tour. After the win, Tim caught up with John Cook.
I could talk to you for an hour right now. Your emotions right now. PGA Tour Champions first win, your emotions.
I don't know what to think, you know. It's been a long season. And for me to get it done when I had to, that means a lot.
You knew where you stood coming into this week. What flipped this week? Why did you have your game? I played my last competitive round of golf with you, and I said, man, it's not going to take long for Tim O'Neill to win a golf tournament. Why this week?
I don't know. It was just how it was supposed to happen, I guess. You know, I've been playing well in the past few weeks, just giving too many shots back. And the last 2 days was really solid. And, you know, it only takes 1 week, right? And this is my week.
And Tim O'Neill joins us now from out on the golf course. Tim, congratulations on the victory. When you went into that final round at the Dominion, you were 3 back of Ken Duke. Was your mindset focused on the victory, or was your mindset focused on securing your status for the 2025 season out there?
My mindset was really just trying to make it to the next tournament, to the top 54, because I was one out, and so my mindset was really just to play well and make it to the next tournament. I wasn't really thinking about winning the tournament. I knew I was in a good spot. And then I knew if I played well that, you know, I'd move up with really being double points. But, I would never thought about really winning a golf tournament.
We have seemed to have lost Rex Hoggard there. I thought Rex was still with us. What was that moment like emotionally for you, Tim? Because it's been a long journey. You've won all over the world. You know, you've won in Chile. You've won in Central America as well. You've won in Europe. You've won in Morocco. It's been a long road you've traveled to become an overnight success, as people would see it. What was that moment like in the victory?
Oh, man, it was unbelievable. You know, all the hard work and, you know, playing all over the place. And, you know, I never really played the PGA Tour. You know, I played the Corn Ferry Tour now. Then it was called the Nationwide Tour. But, you know, to finally get status last year through the Q School, which is very difficult. And, you know, I was able to retain my card this year. And then this year, I finally get a win. And it's just, you know, all the hard work that I've put in just finally paid off.
When you say that Q School is very difficult, Tim, that's quite an understatement there. You did win your status on Q School, but twice you missed PGA Tour Q School. You missed getting your card by a single shot twice. That would be a crushing disappointment for a lot of folks. How long did it take you to kind of put that stuff behind you earlier in your career?
Well, I mean, you never really forget about it, but, you know, you just have to keep plugging along. You know, the first time it happened, you know, I didn't know I needed bogey on the last hole, and I just totally screwed the hole up. And then the second time that it happened, and I think it was 2004, I knew I needed birdie. And missed by a shot again. You just have to keep moving forward and keep plugging away, and exactly what I did.
Yeah, keep plugging away is probably the motto for your career. You've played in a remarkable number of places and a remarkable number of tours at this point. Were you ever tempted to just, you know, take a job coaching a college team or giving lessons rather than pursuing the tour life? Because there had to be moments where you doubted whether or not you were going to get to the position that you find yourself in now.
Absolutely. You know, with golf, you have your ups and downs. And I've definitely had my share of downs as well. And, you know, there were a few times where I was really considering hanging them up, you know, didn't have a sponsor. You know, when you're trying to play golf, you need sponsors, and didn't have any sponsors. I was was in a bad way. And my mom was the one that really encouraged me not to quit. And, you know, passed some opportunities shortly after that. And some doors opened up. And I was able to get on the then it was the PGA Tour Latin America. It's called the America's Tour now. And then I was able to win twice out there. And that kind of what propelled me to keep playing.
You found a tremendous amount of consistency in your results in your couple of years out there in the PGA Tour Champions. Did anything particularly change that allowed you to get so comfortable so quickly?
Well, I didn't think it happened very quickly, but my first year after retaining, you know, status out there through the Q School, I learned very quickly that my short game was terrible. And it's still not where it needs to be, but that was one of my weakest points where I knew I had to get better. These guys on the Champions Tour are really good around the greens, and that was my weakest point. And, you know, it's still a process for me. I'm still trying to get better. But that was just one of the things that really stood out where, okay, if I'm going to compete at this level, my short game is going to have to get a lot better. So it's something that I worked really hard on with my coach and little by little, just keep getting a little bit better. And that's what I try to do every day. That's why I'm out here right now.
Tim, I think I'm back. I'm trying to get better every day, too. I did want to ask you about that Sunday. When you start your round, and as you pointed out, just a little bit off the lead, but you're 5-under through 10 holes, what were your emotions and what will you learn from that final round?
Well, you know, for some reason, I was really calm. You know, I was just trying to play one shot at a time. I had a number that I wanted to get to on Sunday. And I hit that number at the turn, and I knew I was playing well. It was just a matter of me just giving myself more chances on the back nine. Like I said, I never really thought about winning a golf tournament. I mean, I know it's a cliche, but I was really just playing one shot at a time, and I was able to, I played well and was able to pull it off.
Well, it's a terrific finish to 2024 and something great to build on for 2025 as well. Good luck in Phoenix, and we look forward to chatting to you again down the road, Tim.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Before we go to break, here's the 2025 Champions Tour season, which has just been announced. 25 regular season events, 3 playoffs. It starts as usual at Hualalai with the Mitsubishi Electric Championship. 1 new event down in Boca Raton, the James Hardy Pro Football Hall of Fame Invitational. And the American Family Insurance Championship will debut a team format. Now, New York City is home to over 8 million people. Not all of them are golfers, though crowded tee sheets might have you wondering on some weekends. Getting in around can be a real adventure. After the break, we'll take you on a tour of golf across the 5 boroughs. Game 4 of the World Series was in New York last night. The Yankees offense finally woke up and beat Damon Hack's Dodgers 11-4. We're headed for Game 5 in the Bronx tonight. And speaking of New York City, the concrete jungle is an interesting place to be a golfer. Not easy, just interesting. Oliver Horowitz gives us a glimpse.
Every morning, the city that never sleeps wakes up. As the smoke billows out from below the asphalt, the people that make up this sprawling metropolis come alive. Some already hard at work, others simply out for a walk with their four-legged friends. And then, there's folks like me, the schmuck with the golf clubs. My name is Oliver Horowitz, Ollie for short. And while I get ready to board the hour-long one train from Greenwich Village up to the Bronx, the first stop in our New York City golf tour, let me give you some credentials. I was raised in this city. Went to Stuyvesant High School in Manhattan. I've worked as a caddy at the Old Course in St. Andrews, Scotland, played midnight golf in Iceland, even hit a golf ball off Everest Base Camp. I've been around the block when it comes to golf. But despite all the travels, my favorite place to play is in the same city where I grew up.
We are the oldest public golf course in America, 1895. So many things about Van Cortlandt Park really encapsulate what New York City is. It's a melting pot. You have guys on Social Security playing with CEOs of Wall Street companies, and you have firemen playing with retirees.
But I brought my father-in-law here from North Carolina, and we played with these two characters. They were bodyguards, man. My father-in-law says, what are you guys playing for, $10 a hole? And they go, no, $100 a hole. And they are the worst golfers I've ever seen. They were getting 12s, and I go, not one that hole.
Now, full disclosure, this place can get crowded. I've had rounds take over 6 hours here. But I, along with lots of other New York golfers, wouldn't let that stop me from getting out here to play.
For us here in New York, living in a fast-paced environment, time is short, and these New York City golf courses give us a chance to escape.
You're in that concrete jungle, and then you come out here, and you're in the Bronx. You would never know we're in the Bronx. That's the beauty of it.
Had anyone in your family played golf?
Hell no. Are you serious? They look at me as crazy for playing golf, you know? But I love it. What can I say?
While not everyone in New York plays golf, those who do know exactly where they can play all across the five boroughs. The Bronx has a few more courses other than Van Cortlandt to choose from. If you head over to Queens, you got four more. And in Brooklyn, there's Diker Beach and Marine Park. If you're feeling up for a boat ride, you can always hop on the ferry. It's free, by the way. Board at Whitehall Ferry Terminal in Manhattan and take the 20-minute scenic route past Lady Liberty as the seagulls follow behind you on your way to Staten Island. And once you dock, Silver Lake Golf Course will even pick you up in a free shuttle.
How many courses on Staten Island are there?
We have three public, one private.
So it's La Tourette, South Shore, Silver Lake.
And Richmond County Country Club.
10 minutes after being picked up, you're dropped off right by the clubhouse, 20 yards away from the first tee.
We're open all season long. As long as the weather permits, we are open for business.
Even if the weather isn't cooperating or time is limited, there's multiple options back in Manhattan to get in a quick golfing fix, just a short cab ride away. Located right on the Hudson River, Chelsea Piers is actually where I used to have high school practices. And I could even find some old teammates there from time to time.
Everyone else is doing basketball or, you know, some other indoor sport.
Yeah.
You know, we're out here hitting golf balls on the river. We're kids who grew up in this city. You know, most of us haven't seen, we hadn't seen anything past Central Park as far
right.
as green space.
We had practice here once a week on Wednesdays, right?
Yeah.
And I think it was an hour all you could hit. And I would definitely, what I would do is I would just go like this.
Right.
And we'd be left with like 200 golf balls by the end of it. So you can extend your hour to like 2 hours.
I can't believe they still let us back here.
While Chelsea Piers hasn't changed much since I was in high school, the new wave of golf is happening in the city, even when it's dark outside. Simulator bars allow all golfers to play whatever championship courses their heart desires, even ones less than an hour and a half away, like Bethpage Black, the host of the 2019 PGA Championship.
Boom. Oh. Yeah, good one.
It's like New Yorkers with their pizza spots. Everybody's got their place.
Yeah.
Right? You're Marine Park. I grew up playing Van Cortlandt.
I genuinely believe Marine Park is the best public golf course in New York City. But when I say that to someone else, they communicate the same sincerity about their bias. And I'm like, oh, wait a minute. Maybe I...
And then you realize, oh, they're all good.
That's right.
At the end of the day, there's always one constant question for New York City golfers. Why? Why do we put up with everything it takes to play golf in the city? The cold weather, the public transportation, the long rounds.
There's an element to being a New Yorker, whether you're a native or living here, that you just kind of do your thing and you don't really care about what other people think about you. You know, as a New York golfer, I think you just kind of wear it on your sleeve that much more.
Like anything in New York, maybe it's the people that make it. The characters, so vibrant and alive, no matter which borough you're playing in.
There's a little more people, there's a little higher expectation, there's a little more desire for ourself. New Yorkers in general are a little hardier than most. We put up with more, we see more, we've been through more. So it's nothing to jump on a train with your clubs.
So call it whatever you want. The concrete jungle or the Big Apple. I'll just call it what I've always called it. Home.
Man, the number of hours I spent at Van Cortlandt Park letting this game break my heart. Of course, one of golf's biggest events comes to New York next year. The Ryder Cup is at Bethpage Black on Long Island. That's in September. Golf Today, back after this. Time now for the 19th hole. And here is one of the most recognizable characters in golf. Carl Spackler, the greenskeeper on Gopher Patrol, immortalized by Bill Murray in the 1980 movie Caddyshack. Well, how about this? Another Carl Spackler is in action this weekend. This one is an Irish-bred racehorse set to compete in the Breeders' Cup Mile, and it's among the favorites in the race. You can watch the world's best thoroughbreds come together in pursuit of horse racing's title of world champion. The Breeders' Cup World Championship is at Del Mar. Friday, 4 p.m. Eastern Time on USA Network and Peacock. Saturday at 2 p.m. on USA and Peacock. And coverage Saturday is on NBC and Peacock beginning at 3:30 p.m. Eastern Time. Rex, I want to go back to this news that we've been talking about now for 2 days in terms of all of these prospective changes that seem to affect primarily players. It's the number of them who will have cards and the number of them who will get starts. Do you see this as the leading edge of change that we're going to see, where it will eventually affect the schedule, perhaps a number of tournaments, and eventually get to a point where they start to focus on fans rather than players?
This certainly feels like it's going to something bigger. If you look at where we were the last 2 years, the tour tinkered and came up with the concept of what became signature events. We've seen them evolve and become what they've become. Now they're taking a hard look at full field events. They're taking a hard look at eligibility, taking a hard look at sort of the brick and mortar of the PGA Tour. And you look ahead to 2026, you can certainly see the foundation being laid. You don't know where this is going, and certainly the tour has a plan in place, but there doesn't seem to be a status quo anymore.
You know, Rex, for Halloween, I decided to dress as a gray-haired golfer who can't play worth a lick, and I'm starting to worry that you might have actually chosen the same costume as me. But I know one costume we won't be wearing is that of a college golfer. Let's send it back out to watch the conclusion of the East Lake Cup. Enjoy the golf.